Welcome to Tribe Talk, the bi-monthly podcast by Tribe of Women. I'm Amy Robinson, founder of Tribe of Women. During each episode, I'll be joined by members of my tribe as we hear from guest speakers and powerful women who connect to our mission to establish cultures of women supporting women and recognizing more good men. We will also tell stories of you, our listeners, working in your communities to support your tribes and to answer your questions about how to grow the tribe of women together. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, I'm Laurie Marshall. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. In our first podcast, Tribe of Women founder Amy Robinson shared her initial experiences and revelations that led to her decision that Tribe of Women was a movement that was ready to move and that she was the one that would have to move it. Today, we'll be talking about the process of crafting a movement. In a nutshell, we'll discuss some of the challenging lessons, how great serendipity can be when it appears, and what exactly does the name on a wine bottle reveal about the woman who drinks it? Hey, Amy.
Hi, Lori.
Have you recovered from the excitement of our first podcast going live?
Oh, recovered? No.
Maybe not yet.
I think I'm still pretty excited. So I don't know if that's technically recovered. I have to say that we made such a great decision in partnering with the pod here at the Artist Evolution. Ella Jane is simply the best and brightest, and I can honestly say we could not, or maybe would not, have taken on the task of a podcast. And so we couldn't have done it without them. So it's been such a great experience. And the feedback has been great. It's being shared on all the social media channels and getting lots of play. I think that the best feedback that we've gotten is that the first episode is tempting people to hear the second episode.
Yes.
So no pressure
Stick
today,
around.
Right?
Yeah, really. Yeah, I think we're definitely going to be in the honeymoon stage for a little while.
Absolutely. So I'm going to throw that back at you. And how are you feeling?
I'm doing well. It's fun to do something a little different and to get the feedback from people who maybe are seeing me do something that they're not used to. So that's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Great.
Well, when we left off on that first episode, you had just had the revelation that you needed to create the movement that would become Tribe of Women. And your experience as a business and entrepreneurial coach probably helped somewhat. But I remember you talking about how different that process was that you basically had to start coaching yourself, right? So tell us some of the things you did to get feedback when you were honing in on what that should be.
Yes. Well, I've been a business coach for over 15 years now, and it is undoubtedly different to give advice and be the accountability partner for people versus taking the advice and doing the work. I've been on the outside looking into a wide range of businesses from the dot-com boom to nano and biotech to retail innovation, all the way to nonprofits and boutiques and Main Street stores that are at the heart of our community. And they've gifted me with a collection of experiences, to be sure. Still, the entrepreneurial journey is one of adaptation. So I often find myself stepping outside of myself and looking in and thinking, what is going on here and what should happen next? Needless to say, well, even with all of those industries and all those experiences, I have not come across a business model for a movement.
No?
A handbook?
Maybe we need to write a book.
So coming out of the TEDx talk and feeling like something needed to happen, there wasn't really a model or a roadmap that I was aware of at the time. So what does anybody do when they're faced with something that they know nothing about? I just looked to what I do know. And what I did know is that whenever someone came to me with an innovation, we would start with market research. And I can't tell you how many times someone would put a huge effort, sometimes all the way to prototyping, into an innovation and then walk into my office and a quick search on the internet would prove that it was already invented and on the market. Mm-hmm. but that's not, you know, it's never to say that things can't be improved upon. So sometimes being first to market is not always ideal. Either way, here I was with what I kept thinking was not a new idea, that women supporting women was kind of, you know, common sense. And that surely there were hundreds, if not thousands, of organizations focused on this, right? Mm-hmm. That's what kept going through my mind.
We would hope.
Yeah. So some preliminary research in 2014, kind of after the TEDx talk, revealed that there were hundreds and thousands of organizations supporting women, but they were not necessarily focused on women supporting women. Mm-hmm. And so my next question to myself was the same question I had while developing the TEDx talk. Why? Why does this need to be said? Why does this need to be stated? What difference will it make? Why isn't it happening naturally? And why does it need this push or a movement? So next up in my business endeavors, we're typically focus groups. Alongside my coaching, I'm a facilitator. So guiding conversations, asking questions, and helping people find their own answers is my job. And now I had to do it for myself.
So how did that look? What did that look like for you?
Well, so looking back, what I've coined this as was a listening tour. Mm-hmm. And I was still in a lot of doubt that a movement was necessary, or that there was a path to women supporting each other more, or that it was even needed. Mm-hmm. So I started close to home. I literally went home to Montrose, Colorado, a little town in western Colorado. And one of my dearest girlfriends from high school had joined forces with another friend and created a group for women called Three Graces. And one of them handily owns a bed and breakfast.
Oh, very nice.
It
That's
is very
serendipity
nice.
Part.
It
part
is.
Of, part of the serendipity part.
And so we gathered there. And literally in a circle in the backyard on a beautiful summer day. And it was a gathering of all the ages and stages of life. Some were my family, my mother and my daughter, my aunt, my cousin, some friends from high school, mm-hmm. which was awesome. And many that were unknown to me and a lot of people that didn't know each other. And everyone had called on their own tribes to gather in this collective tribe and to talk and share. And we, at that time, called it a tribe talk.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. I use the TEDx talk as a guide for our conversation. One of the keys to facilitation and to participation is creating a safe place. It's building trust among one another, asking good questions, and listening deeply. And it's amazing what grows and blooms in an environment of acceptance. Mm-hmm. Right. So creating that environment was absolutely vital. It was also kind of happened naturally. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful when women gather. So this was the first, but it happened every single time. There was a pattern and there's a flow and there's a swell in these circles of conversation. And we typically start on a topic that grows into story sharing, mm-hmm. that grows into self sharing, and that grows to self and group discovery of these common connections that we so often have. And from that grows empathy, which for women, I found in my business coaching of entrepreneurs, women lead from empathy. And so this growth of empathy in this circle of women sharing their stories and sharing themselves also develops into a call to action. And so they're not easy conversations. Mm-hmm. So let's not mistake any of that.
Right.
There are some hard questions asked and some deep stories told. And yet in this environment, they flow. I was very fortunate in my career to find a book called Fierce Conversations. It's by Susan Scott. And not only has it helped me as a facilitator, it reinforced my belief in the power of true, deep conversation. There's a quote at the very beginning of her book that really sets the stage for the book and also for that belief. And it says, "Our lives succeed or fail gradually, then suddenly, one conversation at a time. While no single conversation is guaranteed to change the trajectory of a career, business, a marriage, or a life, any single conversation can. The conversation is the relationship.
That's nice.
Yeah. She's a wonderful writer, and this really held true in a Tribe Talk setting. And that was what was happening in each Tribe Talk. So we went from there to another natural place, to another and to another. And every conversation, perspectives were shifting. And we were raising the consciousness around the importance of tribes of women, whether we already had them, or we felt that we needed them, or we wanted them, or some people were healing from them. Mm. They'd had some traumatic experiences within what they felt was a tribe. And we were building awareness about the importance of them. And women were going out from them with their lens of tribe on, mm-hmm. and the world was looking different. It was looking more open and more supported and more possible.
So you were calling on your tribe to have these initial tribe talks, but you were also being asked to visit more formal settings to share your story and lead some discussion, right?
Yes. I'd facilitated conferences and done workshops and presentations for women in business for many years, and I was being asked to continue that work. So I began applying the principles that I was learning in these tribe talk circles to those engagements as well. And so through that, we kind of developed this philosophy, if you will, that, you know, tribe talks are the dialogues that we have to have in order to build cultures of women supporting women, and that they're not presentations. So often I was standing on a stage and there was this huge disconnection between me and the audience that we were learning with. And that was one of the things about the circles. I was learning as much, if not more, as what we were learning from each other and what I was teaching, so to speak. And so this philosophy of stepping off the stage and sitting by each other, talking with each other and connecting to each other became an absolute core principle of what a tribe talk is. And so that was great in a circle of women in a backyard. But how does that apply to literally standing on a stage? How do you have a conversation from a stage? Mm-hmm. How do you have a conversation, a panel discussion with an audience? How do you do that in a workshop setting? And so it began experimenting with that, and it works. And I would say probably one of the ultimate tests of this came when I was asked to speak at Cottey College. And Cottey is an all-girls school. I was asked to go there to speak to 125 high school seniors at 8 o'clock on a summer morning.
No, awesome. They're going to be so excited.
I know. They're like, And we had a conversation. Even though I was supposed to be doing a keynote, it was a conversation and it was beautiful. And so I thought, you know what, this works. And it's important because for everyone to be able to own what their tribe is, what tribe means to them, why they want to be part of a tribe, how they want to build their tribe is vital to the conversation. So what I was experiencing was the difference between telling someone to join a movement based on my personal vision versus engaging people in the vision because it matters to them. It matters to you.
Yes, me and all of us. So at this point, our team was growing. Serendipity was checking back in and putting us in touch with some other terrific women in our community who were doing just what you described, taking ownership of the vision of Tribe of Women. And we started figuring out that we needed to hammer out some goals and a mission statement and all of those things that you need to do things. So we planned some retreats.
Yeah, we needed to start moving.
Exactly. And moving meant getting together and having a great weekend with each other.
Yeah. I hate it when that happens. Yeah. Yeah, so in my search for affirmation that this was a good idea, I gathered the women like you who had been part of my tribe, who I think that saw the need for this and wanted to be part of it. And sometimes I feel like you were all just waiting for me to decide that I wanted to lead.
There may have been. There was no back. There was no talk behind your back. Let me put it that way. But I think maybe.
Yes. Oh, the patience of a tribe of women.
It all came together when it was supposed to. Okay.
Absolutely, it did. And who we needed, just like you said, serendipity stepped in, and who we needed was just there. And, you know, there's sometimes a struggle with the time that people are willing to give. I struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I feel obligated. I feel like, you know, why would somebody just give this time to this thing that we don't even know what it is?
Come do this thing that we can't describe yet.
But because of that, there was just this constant pull. There was this constant movement forward, and it was just taking all of us along. And at the same time, I think it's really important when someone is giving their time that we appreciate that. And so in this very first retreat, this kind of gathering together, I just wanted to give something back to you all because you were giving your time and your talent. And we had all the perfect talent there. We had everybody, mm-hmm. You as a writer, we had technology, we had business experience. We just had, I couldn't
legal,
have put,
financial,
yes, legal, financial.
So
I could not have put the dream team together better than the way that it came together naturally. So one of the things that I did was, one of the things that's really important to me is just that appreciation. And so I went down to a mall kiosk.
Like you do.
And I chose these wine glasses and I had Tribe of Women inscribed on them. And that just kind of set a tone for mm-hmm. us as a team,
yes, it did.
As a group.
Not a drinking tone.
Not
mind you.
A drinking tone,
a theme
of appreciation for one another, of thinking about one another, and giving gifts. So, so we did that, and we had a great time. We got to know each other. The beauty of it is that not everybody knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
You were all learning about and meeting each other for the first time in some instances. Mm-hmm. So when I was setting up for that retreat, I had been reading, and I stumbled upon a book called Tribes, We Need You to Lead Us.
What?
I know. Seth Godin, brilliant. And I was just like, are you kidding me? And it affirmed, and one of the quotes from the book that I love is, the secret of leadership is simple. Do what you believe in. Paint a picture of the future. Go there. People will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started to marry into everything else that I'd been experiencing. It also gave me that little push over the edge,
right?
That it had to be led, it had to be moved forward, and I needed to commit to that movement. One of the other quotes that I love is, a tribe is a group of people connected to one another, connected to a leader, and connected to an idea. For millions of years, human beings have been part of one tribe or another. A group needs only two things to be a tribe: a shared interest and a way to communicate.
Mm.
And so here we were. Mm-hmm. We were a tribe. You were all there because you knew me. We were all there.
You were our leader.
Because we knew the importance collectively of a tribe of women. And now we needed this way to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tribe Talks had started us down that path, and we were going to build on that.
So then we started having some regular meetings. And as I recall, we were making movement on having actual meetings, and you mm-hmm. were leading those meetings. So, and then where did that go in your head?
What happened next? Oh, well, we don't want to go where I went in my head.
Okay, so what can you say? What can you say that would not be just in your head?
So the other thing that was happening was I was continuing to do my coaching. And so we, you know, this movement was moving and it was taking on a cadence and some regularity and some form. At the same time, I was still doing my business coaching and I am part of a group of executive leaders. We get together once a month and we talk about the challenges that we're facing. It's wonderful. It's executive therapy, basically.
It's a good other tribe.
It is. It is. And I'd been part of that for years. And they are a great tribe of men and women. And so it just so happened that it was my turn to present my issue. And what I brought to them was that I had a lot of opportunities in my coaching, and I could take that a certain direction. But this movement keeps moving and it keeps shifting forward, and I couldn't figure out how to connect them without confusing them. And much like the women that were surrounding us through Tribe of Women, they were all looking at me going, when are you just going to do it?
Yeah, just do the thing.
And that is literally what they said. Mm-hmm. You are a tribe of women. You need to roll it all up and go. Mm-hmm. And that was a turning point for me. That was huge. These were people that had been with me through a lot, both personally and professionally,
right.
And had watched me and were looking me straight in the eye and saying, "It's time." Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. So in essence, the next day, both mentally and kind of coming out to the world, I basically quit my job.
You just told yourself you quit.
I told myself, I quit you.
Yeah, that
works. And, you know, of course, it's never that easy just to walk away from your revenue stream. I have an extremely supportive family and husband that were getting behind me. And saying, okay, yeah, we're ready. Let's do this.
And it's also not easy to let go of that part of you that has defined you, right? I mean, that was who you are. People needed certain services and they called you. And now, now you're, oh, I'm creating a movement. What?
Yeah. I
don't. Okay.
Total identity.
Are you going to start a school?
Total identity crisis. I was going from what I knew into the unknown.
Right.
And, you know, I'd built a business and an image and people knew me for and as a certain person. And I was completely shifting to a different realm. But I was taking everything that I knew with me. And, but that was still a process. I would say it probably took about 9 months, which, to kind of transition and kind of get my head around all of those things, which ironically is what it takes to carry a child.
Oh, baby.
And so the other thing that was happening was that I was going from working by myself, for myself, to building a team. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting as well, because, you know, if I got the work done or how I got the work done, you know, the sausage making process,
right.
It wasn't for the world to see necessarily. And if it got done, it got done. And if it didn't get done, it was because I didn't do it. And so building a team was a different animal too.
Right. Inviting all these people into your kitchen.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes literally.
Yes, right. Actual kitchens.
Yes, exactly. Walking through my laundry room. Yeah, the whole night. And so that was interesting. And this is the point in time where I start falling back on my own coaching and the advice that I would give to other people and how to build their teams. And so one of the things that I always started with in coaching was values, mission, and vision. And why that's important is because it's our constant filter. And so we're building a team, we're building a tribe, we're building it based on a culture. Mm-hmm. And so we need to decide what that was. And so, you know, we built the values of acceptance and connection, support, relationships, gifts, and curiosity. You know, that's the ultimate goal. That's the thing right. that will forever stay right. out there is what we hope for. Oh,
the Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail. Right. But we also need to decide, what are we going to do in the short term? What's going to happen over the next 3 to 5 years? What's our mission? What's something tangible that we think that we can accomplish? And that became that we established cultures of women supporting women and more good men in our personal and professional lives. That we advanced gender equity by building tribes of acceptance, connection, and leadership. So those are the things that we can always look back on. And one of the other things is walking our talk and making sure that we're doing that among ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so we decided one day that we were going to have regular weekly meetings. And so to that very first meeting, in order to kind of walk our talk, I brought gifts mm-hmm. to our meeting.
Sticking
with our theme, gifts being one of our values, I brought bottles of wine.
of course.
So I went to the store and I just bought different kinds of wine that had really funny, cool labels. I have no idea if they even tasted good.
I think mine was good.
I think yours was good.
I think it's gone, so I must
have. And I just said, okay, everybody, grab a bottle of wine and you right. all picked one. And then I made the announcement that would then be henceforth Forever. Your nickname.
Oh, yes, that's right. As we search for the Holy Grail, we would then become knighted with these names.
So let's see. I know that you were Kung Fu Girl.
Kung Fu Girl.
We had Boom Boom and the
Velvet Devil.
We had Acrobat.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
And I think that was Allie.
Oh,
and
so.
And then I know for certain that I was Mad Housewife.
Yes. They all worked. They were all good.
They all worked. And so, we always have.
That was serendipity, too. I think that was a strange, wow, looking around the room at each other. I think these work.
We see how that works. Absolutely. Well, and I think the other thing that's happening as we're building a team, and I think that this relates to everyone in their lives, and that is the concept of my tribe, your tribe, and the tribe. Mm-hmm. And that's a really... And it's one of the questions that we ask in tribe talks about what that means to everybody. But I do have, my tribe, and you've got, people that are close to you in certain stages of your life and for certain reasons. And then you have your tribe, and they might overlap mm-hmm. and they might be connected. You may have several tribes that kind of overlap and mm-hmm. connect. And bringing those tribes together is often a beautiful thing. Yeah. It's also okay for certain people not to get along. And that can happen as well. But then there's the concept of the tribe. So the fact that we are all part of the tribe. So right. collectively, we are the tribe of women. And kind of keeping that in mind, I feel like it's what makes the world go round. Mm-hmm. And that acceptance and that flowing in and out of those tribes through those ages and stages mm-hmm. of our lives, but having this consciousness that we are all in this together as the tribe of women mm-hmm. is extremely valuable.
I have to say that as I have started wearing that lens more often, it's definitely easier for me to, as you discuss in your TEDx talk, just letting go of the judgment of other people and not being so quick to say, well, that's not the way I think that should be done, or that's not how I would have, pursued that goal or whatever. And mm-hmm. it's so much easier to say, okay, but she's not me. So mm-hmm. why is it my business? So that it's definitely made a difference in the way I see things.
Absolutely. And I think that that's definitely kind of where I hope that the lens of tribe will take everyone.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that was developed early on was the concept of these three pillars of tribe. And it's I see you, I hear you, and I feel you. And we write blog posts that are tagged to each one of those, and it's something that we use on our social media. I think it's one of the things that's probably the most unique to our mission compared to some other women's movements, maybe. Can you share a little bit about where that came from and what that means to you?
Absolutely. So that was directly from the TEDx talk and the way that it was organized and flowed. And it was really based on the concept that I see you is that acceptance of ourselves is the path to acceptance of others. Mm-hmm. And so I see you starts in the mirror. It's like, I see you. I see you myself. Mm-hmm. I see myself as I am, and I'm good with that. And because a lot of times what tends to happen, and I think that part of the basis of women not supporting each other or judging each other, is that a lot of times it comes from the fact that we don't really like ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we are criticizing another woman for being different, or maybe there's something deep-seated that we don't like about ourselves that we see in them, or something that we want to be and that we're not doing. And so that self-love is absolutely core and necessary to seeing other people. So that I see you is, I see you myself, but it's also, I see you, my sister. Maybe I see myself in you, or maybe I just see an aspect of you that I can appreciate and connect to. And then I hear you is about that connection. So once we do reach out, and sometimes it is based on a beautiful bracelet, or a necklace, or a pair of shoes, and we connect there, and we reach out to each other. And then the next is that conversation that starts with, oh my gosh, I got these shoes at so-and-so.
Goodwill.
Or Goodwill.
That's what my response usually is.
I love to brag about how inexpensive I got my shoes. But that's where we fall into conversation and where we connect, and that's where we hear each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hear you, you know, you say, you know, kind of just generally we're like, oh, I hear you, sister. Mm-hmm. I hear you. I get that. Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about. That is our path to empathy. That is the place where we are connecting on some level. And women, you know, you can have a story about something that's happened in your life, and I may not have that exact experience, but I will go into the recesses of my memory and I will find something where that I can bring forward that is similar, where I can have that empathy with you. Mm-hmm. and I can go there, and building that empathy is where I feel you. Mm-hmm. and that is the path. And in that I feel you is where I feel like, in my experience, women building businesses, that's where they built it from. They built it from an experience. They built it from a place of empathy. They built it from where things needed to get done, where a problem needed to be solved. And so in that empathy is where we also reach back and bring other women up.
And that's one of the things that I think I hear the most about why there needs to be more diversity in the workplace and in educational systems and in leadership and generally, is that women solve problems. Mm-hmm. And so if you need to be solving problems, mm-hmm. maybe you need more women in the room.
Yeah.
So.
And we have a lot of GSD power when mm-hmm, we
definitely.
Are passionate about things.
We need to get the things done and get home to have our glass of wine.
Exactly. And we do get it done.
So something else that really stands out to me, and it's something that I think a lot of people have commented on just in conversations that we've had, is the message that you share in the TEDx talk about addressing mean girl culture, and mm-hmm. it's on our website. Mm-hmm. And we've even run into people that aren't really sure what that even is, which mm-hmm. kind of blows my mind. But aside from the
not
movie,
often.
not very often. Most of the time people say, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Aside from the movie that Lindsay Lohan starred in, mm-hmm. what exactly is mean girl culture? Why is it a problem, and how are we addressing it?
Absolutely. Well, I think that kind of like in the TEDx talk, I think a lot starts with, and I go back to a lot the F word of feminism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talked about how it surprised me when the young woman came up to me and said it was the F word. Yes. In a negative way.
Right. Right.
Because it has moved us forward and has a positive message, and it's not just for women. Men can be feminists too,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And that concept of kind of really being comfortable, just kind of walking along, thinking that this has all been done, that if I'm nice to other women, then surely all women are nice to other women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe these things are going on in the periphery or they're isolated incidents. But really what was happening is that while I'm blindly walking comfortably along in what I think is the path that's been blazed, that these weeds have actually grown up behind us. Mm-hmm. And one of my stories is I have my oldest is a daughter. And as a teenager, I was standing behind her watching a show. And I won't name what show, but it was, you know, one of those kind of soap opera-y shows. Mm-hmm. And I looked over her shoulder and I was kind of watching the show for a minute. And one of these girls on the show was being really nasty. And I said, oh, she must be the mean girl. And then something else happened. I went, oh, wait, no, is that the mean girl? And then something else happened. I went, wait a minute, who's the mean girl? And my daughter turned around and looked at me and she said, Mom, they're all mean girls. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what is happening? Mm-hmm. And so I'm not pointing a strict finger. Well, I am pointing a strict finger, but not a singular finger at media.
Right.
But it's what our children consume a lot of. It's what we consume a lot of. Mm-hmm. And so when it's portrayed in that way constantly, that mean girl is just part of our culture, mm-hmm. and that's just the way it is, mm-hmm. then we kind of settle into this acceptance, mm-hmm. of the fact that mean girl exists and it's just there and there's nothing we can do about it. Mm-hmm. And that takes our power away. So in our culture, mean girl is a common term, but understanding what it really is really important. So not very long ago, just this past year, a woman reached out to me based on the TEDx talk and said, you know, this is it. I love it. My name is Susan Skog, and I have a book called Mending the Sisterhood and Ending Women's Bullying. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hallelujah. So Susan had been working on this women's bullying for years and written a book about it. It's a really, really good book, highly recommended. And I hope that we'll be able to work with her in the future. And really what that opened my eyes to is that mean girl really is the definition of bullying.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so one of the things that we have to be very, very careful of is mean girl versus boundaries. Mm-hmm. Boundaries are healthy.
Yes.
Boundaries are good. We don't all have to get along. And there are people that are just not good for us. It doesn't necessarily even make them bad people.
Right.
It's just they're not people that we need in our lives. And so boundaries are great. How do we define that against mean girl? So if I just say, you know, you and I don't get along, we really shouldn't be friends. And how I deal with that is kind of the difference between mean girl and boundaries.
Yes.
Mean girl is much more along the lines of the definition of bullying. So what we don't want to happen is for me to say I have boundaries and therefore I'm a mean girl to evolve. So making sure that we walk that line. I think the other thing that we're finding through Tribe Talks and through these conversations is that it's really important to hold space for people to grow. Mm-hmm. So somebody that may have been a mean girl, giving them room to grow out of that.
Right.
And to make changes and to be different. And not having that label forever be on you. So back to that, one of the very first Tribe Talks in that circle in Colorado, mm-hmm. of high school friends and family and people I didn't know. One of the women there from high school in that safe, accepting environment, just popped right out and said, I was a mean girl. I was that girl. She said, I was not happy with myself. I was having family issues and I was taking it out on the world. Mm-hmm. And, but now I'm not. I saw it. I see it. I made changes. I grew up. Mm-hmm. So if I or anybody that had been there that we went to high school with, if we had labeled her that forever, infinitely,
right,
she wouldn't be there in that circle.
Right.
Well, she wouldn't be in a safe place where she could come out and say, I did that, and this is how I changed and moved on. And that is not to say by any means, and I'm not a psychologist, that there are not toxic people in the world.
Yes, absolutely.
And that there are not people that you really do have to create some harsh boundaries around, and that may never change. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to, walk both of those lines.
Right. That's where we have to give grace, I think, and have the empathy. Mm-hmm. And also, it's important to remember that mean girl applies no matter what age we are. Mm-hmm. And we can't assume that mean girl culture is something that we just need to address with our children. Obviously, you are not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good to remember that that can follow us into the workplace and into book club or mm-hmm. whatever else we're doing. And it applies no matter how old you are. You're still a girl.
And if you're a victim of mean girl at any point in time, in talking to high school girls and into college and early career, when you've had a bad experience, then you do tend to be on the lookout for that in the future. And and that can be damaging, and you can kind of, you know, close some of your circles mm-hmm. To protect yourself from that. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, as far as age goes, I think that one of the things that we talked about as mean girl culture being the way it is, I was talking to a father that was confronted with the fact that his daughter was a mean girl in middle school. Mm. And he was horrified by it, learning that his daughter was not good to another girl at that age. And while he was feeling horrible, he also said, well, you know, that's just the way girls are at that age.
Mm-hmm.
And so while we know that it's not okay, we're also giving permission for it to happen.
Yeah.
And so, and also perpetuating the belief that it is the way it is, when we know that that's a perception and it's not the way it has to be.
Right, right. So in our first episode, you shared an encounter that you had with a young man who was encouraging the women in his life to watch your TEDx video. And he was hearing your voice in his head, even as he communicated with his fiance, which is amazing. He's a great example of the kind of guy that we like to highlight in our efforts to recognize more good men. Why is it important, do you think, that men should be involved in a movement that is about women supporting women?
Yeah. This is, again, something that I was not expecting and am pleasantly surprised by. First of all, men are curious. Women not supporting each other is affecting their world, too. It's affecting their lives. It's affecting their workplaces. And they also perpetuate it in some instances by labeling women don't support each other. And so they often treat situations coming from that perception. And so I think that one of the things that, again, back to media, is that men are also stereotyped.
Oh,
men
absolutely
face a lot of stereotypes, as women do. There's a great movie called Misrepresentation,
mm-hmm.
and it's about women in media and how women are portrayed in media and how that's perpetuating some of the gender bias that's happening. And when they did that, they then did another movie called The Mask You Live In, And it's kind of a play on masculinity. And they're looking at boys and masculinity and how they're raised and what the definition of masculinity is. So while women have stereotypes on who we should be, men also have stereotypes on who they should be.
Right, right.
And the beauty of misrepresentation and the mask you live in is that the organization then became the Representation Project.
Cool.
And so representing both genders. And because we affect one another. And, you know, our ultimate goal, as we say in our vision, is, you know, we want it to be the tribe of human and the human tribe. I think that what we're looking at is how women supporting each other can affect and grow into that.
So now we have a movement, and we have some things that we want to do as Tribe of Women, and ways that people could be involved. So can you throw out a little list of things that people can do to join in? Yeah,
absolutely. So the entrepreneurial journey is not a straight and narrow path. It meanders a lot. So I think one of the coolest things about doing this podcast and being one of the things that we're doing is that one of our huge filters is, you know, so our questions to ourselves are we working with women? Are we working to support women, supporting women? And then what's our impact? And so as we've been moving forward, we've realized that, you know, Tribe Talks, we don't have a lot of capacity for as many Tribe Talks as we'd want to do. I'd love to sit in all the living rooms all across, across the country. So how do we do that? And so how do we look at our business model in a way that is going to bring it to more people and include people into the conversation and with each other? And so podcast obviously is one of our first steps. It was one of the lights that we followed that said, yes, this is going to get us to a place where we can do this at a on a bigger level and a bigger scale. And then, of course, we are doing Tribe Talks. That doesn't mean that we're not doing that. So we have everything from keynotes to group conversations. And in group conversations, it's cool because a lot of times that identifies what those focus areas need to be. Is it in a group of is it a women's shelter that needs to have a group conversation, and what area do they need to concentrate on? Is it a company or a corporation, or is it a women's group? And it kind of helps identify for the group, but also for people individually, you know, what area of the path towards Tribe of Women am I focusing on? And then we also have panel conversations, which is really facilitating that conversation between a panel and an audience directly, which is a little harder than I think. It's definitely scarier. There's not, you know, 100% prepped questions. And so you've got to have some brave panelists for that. And then those all evolve into workshops and retreats where we can do some hands-on deep diving. And eventually, as everyone is on this journey with us, those will evolve into other things and other ways that we can reach larger audiences. And then we also, kind of in the vein of our gifts, our concept of gifts, we're developing retail. We're developing gifts for women to buy for each other. So we are also supporting women in the entrepreneurship realm, because we are partnering with women entrepreneurs to create those. So that's really exciting for us.
It is. I'm excited about that.
So then one of the other things that I'm really excited about, and it's timely for our recording today, because you are about to embark on a little bit of an adventure.
I would go so far as to say a pretty big adventure.
Pretty big adventure. Yeah, so what we're finding is that as we're having Tribe Talks, as we are going where women gather, which is what we call it. Like, let's go where you are. Everybody doesn't have to come to us.
Right.
We are going to you, and we're meeting you where you are. And we're finding women telling amazing stories. Mm-hmm. And so we're starting what we call Tribe Stories. And we've been trying to gather stories from women for quite some time. Not everybody's a writer, but women tell some really good stories. Absolutely. So how can we collect that and bring that forward? And so eventually our website will have a place to house those stories, and we will be featuring those stories here on the podcast. Yes. In the meantime, we are sending you to where women gather in Washington, D.C.
There'll be a few women. There'll be a few women there this weekend. I think it's going to be pretty amazing. And I'll be writing about it on our blog. So by the time this airs, again, there should be a blog post up about it.
There will be. And you're also going to be collecting stories of women. So
yes. Oh, yes. Yes. That's where we were going with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll be collecting stories of women who are in D.C. and why they're there and what it means to them to be a part of that. That crowd.
And stories about their tribes, too.
And about their tribes. Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're just really excited about what's next. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, we don't know what's next. But including people in the conversation, taking questions, going where women gather, and fostering these conversations to become the tribe of women and raise this consciousness. And oh my gosh, this world mm-hmm. where we are walking around with the lens of tribe on, oh, it's going to be a beautiful thing. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 1 and 2 and the origin story of Tribe of Women. In our next episode, we'll be interviewing an exciting guest, answering your questions and sharing your stories. We'll also be having a special giveaway and making some exciting announcements associated with the month of February, or as we like to call it, Love Your Tribe Month. Sign up for our 30-day Love Your Tribe Challenge or join our newsletter at tribeofwomen.com and be the first to hear about our podcast guests, giveaways, and announcements. Until next time.
This is Tribe of Women.
Lorraine Mosier.
Courtney Lawless.
Laurie Marshall.
And Amy Robinson. Thanks for listening.